You're listening to Vermont Edition. I'm Connor Cyrus. The state's hotel voucher program has been the center of debate and was a big topic of conversation during Governor Phil Scott's press conference Tuesday. The hotel voucher program was started at the beginning of the pandemic to house those who were experiencing homelessness and has continued through many extensions, which are now set to expire on December 31st, according to the governor. But the back and forth continues. The governor says the demand for emergency housing and shelters is a symptom of Vermont's current housing crisis. Ultimately, permanent housing solutions, not simply emergency housing or shelters, are needed. Some advocates want the housing program expanded to those who were kicked out through a change of criteria for eligibility. To help us figure out what's going on and all the various policy changes, we now welcome VT Digger reporter Lola Dufort to the show. Lola, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So let's just get started. So you've done several stories on the hotel voucher program, and this is a program that started at the beginning of the pandemic with COVID funds to ensure Vermonters were housed. It appears the program started out really simply. And when and why did things change and become so complex?
Yeah. So at the beginning of the pandemic, Vermont did something pretty remarkable, which is that it housed virtually all homeless people in vacant motels. And in the summer, when it kind of felt and looked like maybe the pandemic was going to be behind us, the state decided to start transitioning a lot of folks who were currently housed in that program out, and they created new eligibility criteria to winnow down the folks who were housed there. Both the governor and also legislators were saying that this is basically not sustainable. We need to transition people out. And won't go through the whole slew of eligibility criteria, but, you know, in general, they wanted, they allowed folks with kids to stay, folks with certain disabilities. There was a lot of back and forth about, you know, whether or not they were being generous enough with the disabilities that they were including. Folks who were fleeing dangerous situations, for example, a domestic violence situation, were also allowed to remain. And so we had several hundred people, maybe close to 1,000, leave since July to now. Quite a few have probably found permanent housing, but quite a few have not. And the thing that has really changed since the summer is that, you know, the Delta variant has brought the pandemic rearing back. And we've also come to an understanding as a state that we are facing an extraordinary rental housing and housing market problem, and that there really is no housing for people to transition into. And so we are now talking about, A, what to do about the folks that are still in the program and also the folks who have been pushed out of the program.
So we're talking about, I think, roughly between 700 to 1,000 people were kicked out of this program when the criteria changed. You mentioned a little bit about where they are now, but what is the state doing to ensure that the people that were kicked out now have a place to stay?
Well, I mean, a lot of them were given, anyone who left was given a $2,500 stipend, although there's been a lot of confusion about whether or not that meant that they could return to the program or not, whether or not they were, you know, forfeiting that money if they didn't leave by a certain date. So that stipend has actually created a lot of anxiety because when and how it would be applied has not really been communicated that clearly to folks on the ground, at least according to advocates and a lot of homeless people. But it's kind of hard to know exactly where folks are. We know a lot of people are couch surfing. Some people did find permanent housing, but a lot of folks are also in places like Sears Lane and, you know, camping out.
So it seems like, you know, as you mentioned earlier, that this comes down to like the age-old problem that we have here in Vermont, which is there's simply just not enough housing. How did the hotels and motels respond to this, and how are they responding now?
Well, I mean, a few have exited the program, but we still have, it seems, capacity for basically the folks who are there. And, you know, the Scott administration had argued for a while that there was, you know, that people probably needed to leave because the motels just didn't have room for them. We had, you know, leaf peeping season come, and now we're headed towards ski season. It's, I think, unclear at this point exactly how much capacity we have, but it's, I mean, it's generally understood that everywhere is tight. The motels are tight. Certainly emergency shelters, congregate shelters are also very tight. And the housing market itself is a nightmare for everyone.
So in your reporting, we're hearing from people in these programs, and, you know, we can discuss all of, you know, the back and forth, but what are you hearing from the people that are directly impacted by this?
You know, it's interesting. A lot of folks who are in the program have said that it was really transformational, that it offered more stability than they have had in years. At the same time, even folks who were housed in the motels will say it's not ideal. And I think this is something that everyone agrees with across the board, that the motel programs cannot be a long-term solution. You know, a simple thing is it's very hard to cook in a motel room. And so there are a lot of kind of basic comforts that aren't available there, even while it's offered an extraordinary amount of stability to a lot of folks that didn't have it before, and has allowed them to, you know, access services and really think about what they might be able to do next.
Now, we know this was paid for through COVID relief funds, but what other resources, or is that the main resource that has changed from pre-pandemic times to now?
Yeah, I mean, I think in general, the amount of federal money that is flowing into the state is changing the conversation about what is possible across the spectrum, right? On basically every policy issue in Vermont, the conversation has profoundly changed because of the money that is available now. I mean, I remember when the legislature was, you know, debating a $30 million housing bond. Now we're talking about potentially, you know, spending over $200 million on affordable housing, and that's just through straight ARPA funds. And that's something that the governor has proposed to do. He proposed that last session and has re-upped that proposal, which is probably something that we will be talking a lot about come January. He put this forward at the same time as he said that he would be extending the motel program as is, so with people who are currently eligible, at least until December 31st. So we know that the folks that are in the program now can stay until December 31st. And most, if not all of them, will also be allowed to stay later. The Scott administration basically wants to transition to another federal pot of money and, you know, turn the folks who are currently motel residents into quote unquote motel tenants, also federally funded for up to 18 months while they find alternative housing.
And, you know, you talk about all these things that Governor Phil Scott has proposed and what he would like to see. Where does the legislature stand on all of these issues? Do they support him in moving all this forward?
I think that's a big open question. I mean, the legislature is not really in session right now. Although, for example, there's a special legislative panel that approves administrative rules. They're holding a hearing as we're talking right now about the Scott administration's plans. So lawmakers right now appear to be in this place where they're still trying to figure out the full details of this proposal that the governor has put forward and what that would mean. And we haven't really seen a unified response from lawmakers yet, or at least from, you know, Democratic leadership. So I think it's at this point an open question what their counter proposal is going to be. I think we can expect that it is going to be a huge topic of conversation though come January.
Now, before I let you go, I just want to make sure, did I miss anything when it comes to your reporting and the state's motel housing voucher program?
I mean, I think that's about it. I think we've covered the broad strokes.
Awesome. That's Lola DeFort. She's a reporter at VT Digger. Lola, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Now I want to bring staff attorney with Vermont Legal Aid to help us give a little bit more on-the-ground insight into what's going on with the state's motel voucher program. I now welcome Mairead O'Reilly to the show. Mairead, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
So we got the big overview from Lola. Is basically what you heard from Lola, is that an accurate representation of what you're seeing happening on the ground level?
Yeah, absolutely. We're seeing, you know, a lot of folks who, you know, struggled with a lot of confusion over the last couple of months about what their rights were, what their future held. We're feeling a lot of relief from people who are able to stay in through December 31. And there's still a lot of public education that needs to be done around who can access the motel program now, what the story is with the $2,500 stipend that was given, and what that means in terms of folks who are currently experiencing homelessness and maybe need to get inside for the winter. So I think Lola did a great job sort of outlining what we're seeing and what we're hearing from folks.
Now, I think it's really easy for news organizations and myself to take very complicated situations and overly simplify them. You know, part of that is how we tell stories. What are some of the nuances that are left out of reporting when it comes to the motel voucher program?
You know, Connor, you may be dissatisfied with this response, but I think the media organizations in Vermont have really done a tremendous job highlighting the nuances. Lola's organization in particular, you know, there's been some pretty in-depth reporting, both about the benefits of the motel program and also, as she mentioned, that it really is an imperfect program, and it really is a stopgap measure, and it's not where we want to be long-term. Service providers believe that, folks who are in the motels believe that. You know, we're all pretty much on the same page, and I really think there's been some incredibly nuanced reporting on this issue over the last few months.
So as we're looking to the future and that December 31st timeline, there's a lot of uncertainty, but what does it mean for those that are still in the program?
So folks who are in the program, you know, get to stay put, and they're told by the administration that they can stay put after December 31. And, you know, we'll be working with the administration as closely as possible to ensure that any implementation of the sort of next GA program iteration is accessible to our folks. And it's, you know, being administered in a way that's straightforward and frankly ensures that folks aren't dropped off. So I think, you know, a lot of our role now as advocates is to, you know, get the most up-to-date information from the administration and really help communicate, you know, what folks' rights and entitlements and benefits are and what they can be expecting. I think a lot of, you know, I think our clients are tired and worried, and they're tired of worrying about where they're going to and whether they're going to sleep inside. So I think a lot of it is like using this pause to, you know, recollect and help reassure folks that they do have some stability, working as closely with the administration as possible to make that clear.
So earlier in the show, we talked about the 700 to 1,000 people roughly that got kicked out of the motel program. What is legal aid and other advocates doing to get those people back into secure housing and keep track of them so we know that they're safe?
Yeah. So part of what we're doing now is trying to help educate community service providers and folks living outside that just because they took the $2,500 in June or July and left the motel program, that doesn't mean that they're not still entitled to 84 days in the GA motel program. And that they should, you know, if they need a place to stay and they have, you know, they're otherwise eligible because they meet one of the categories of eligibility, Lola delineated many of them, then, you know, they should be calling ESD and trying to get a roof over their heads. And we're here to support them through that process. So again, a lot of it is at this point, community education that, you know, just because folks who are in the motels are protected under the pause, that doesn't vitiate or remove the right to access this benefit for otherwise eligible low-income Vermonters.
So you're saying that the program is still accepting people that maybe has been kicked out, maybe didn't realize it.
Yes. And just to clarify too, not everyone was quote unquote kicked out. So, you know, we're talking about this $2,500. Folks did make a choice. It was a very, very tricky choice. But folks made a choice, a lot of them, to take the $2,500. But again, it's not as though they signed away some right to go back into the motels. And I think, you know, frankly, any assertion that they would be ineligible, I don't think could stand in this climate, because we're headed into winter, Delta rates are surging, and there is literally nowhere for folks to rent. There's a ton of money for rental housing. There just isn't the rental housing. So, you know, I anticipate that a lot of folks who are currently outside are going to, you know, need to get back into the motel program soon.
You know, you kind of touched on this a little bit, but what does winter and Delta, how will that impact Vermont's homeless population? I mean, we know that the warming shelters in the winter are overbooked, oftentimes with a wait list. So what does this mean, and how can advocates mitigate the situation?
I think it feels and looks a little daunting right now. You know, I say that from where I sit, which is comfortable, but I'm sure it's terrifying to people who are living outside. I just, you know, I've spoken with concerned parents whose children are, you know, part of the group of folks who are living outside in encampments. And there are, those folks are getting infected with COVID. And it's really scary to be outside in an encampment, disconnected, you know, without a charged phone, and mostly disconnected from society. It's really, really dangerous. So I think it's really incumbent on all of us to, you know, put our heads together and figure out, is there any more we can do to incentivize program participation from the motels? You know, there are many, many motels who have written to the administration to express their support. And I think that sort of sent a really loud message, but there are certainly fewer motels participating now than were participating in sort of phase one of the pandemic, where our whole economy was shut down. So, you know, what I keep going back to is, how can we make it as easy for the motels to participate in the voucher program as it is to rent to tourists? And I think that's what we need to be focusing on, because there's quite simply nowhere else for folks to go.
Now, is it safe to say that part of the homeless issue here in Vermont is that there's a major housing shortage, or does that oversimplify a super complicated problem?
I think that is not an oversimplification. I think that's a really big part of the problem. For example, over the last several months, you know, folks have been provided with vouchers, with subsidies to have long-term support getting into rental housing, and 50% or so of those vouchers are unused as of today's date. And I think that just indicates there simply aren't the units in which to use that money. I've talked to, you know, dozens and dozens of folks living in the motels now and in the summer, who had all this hope for being transitioned into housing. They had a voucher in their hand for maybe the first time in their life. And, you know, come June or July, we all sort of had an opportunity to assess that housing situation and realized, you know, they're not actually going to be getting into permanent affordable housing right now. I think that's the number one reason why, at least right now in this moment, we have such a large homeless population.
Now, what would be an ideal outcome, in your opinion, and in the perspective of Vermont Legal Aid, going forward? Like, what's the ideal solution to what we're experiencing?
So I'm gonna get a little philosophical for a second.
Okay, I'm ready.
I read this quote that I think really sort of exemplifies where our thinking is starting to go. And it's that it's by the author of New Pandemics, Old Politics, who said, a pandemic is a course correction to the trajectory of civilization. Historical pandemics challenge us to make some fairly fundamental changes to the way in which society is organized. So I think where we're headed right now in our thinking at Legal Aid is that this really may be the moment to seriously consider and actually talk about in a meaningful way, do our people deserve a right to housing? And if not housing, a right to shelter? I think that, you know, we know that this is likely not going to be the only crisis we face in this generation. And we know that housing is health and it's so protective. So, you know, is now the moment to, as we're feeling the stress and the pressure and the urgency around having these folks, such a large number of Vermonters be homeless, is this the time now to really codify those rights to ensure that we're not in the same place at the next crisis?
That's Maraid O'Reilly, staff attorney with Vermont Legal Aid. Maraid, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
The state's hotel voucher program is set to expire December 31st. That's the program that ensured housing to those experiencing homelessness at the beginning of the pandemic. As all of this is happening on the state level, a homeless camp on Sears Lane in Burlington is the center of a big debate. What sparked the most recent debate was a high-profile drug arrest and a situation with first responders and a resident holding a pellet gun. The mayor's office says that people of Sears Lane encampment need to move out by next Tuesday. This is after the city has given a few extensions. Now, I spoke with activist Stephen Marshall earlier today to discuss what's going on at the encampment. This conversation is edited, but we do start with the latest developments in the legal case against the city.
The mayor on Monday issued a changed plan to close the camp a week subsequent to its original closure date, which would be Tuesday of next week. However, on Monday, the camp filed a motion with the Supreme Court, the Chittenden County Supreme Court, to have an emergency stay imposed. So an emergency injunction against the closure of the camp. The court has agreed to hear the case. That will be on Thursday, the 28th, which is 2 days after the closure that Mayor Weinberger issued on Monday. So we expect the city to honor the tradition or the legal requirement, I'm not sure which it is, that they do not close the camp on Tuesday, that they do not come in and arrest people and move people out, and that they respect the hearing date that the court has imposed or issued.
What do you think the responsibility of the city is to keep its residents safe and to allow them housing?
Allow them housing? Do you want to use a different word that is kind of a...
What do you think the responsibility...
How do you allow people housing?
Well, what do you think the responsibility of the city is to grant permission to these people to stay on public property?
When you realize that the market economy fails to provide housing for people who don't have money, you have to say, okay, then it's a public interest to make sure that people who don't have money have a place to live. This is public property and an opportunity. Actually, I love the example of Kerala, India, where people who are poor have a right to a tenth of an acre of any public property that's available. And I just really love the idea that you say, look, if you're poor and you can't afford to rent a house or to buy a house, you get at least a little portion of public land and you get to camp. And that, I think, is a responsibility of the community. That responsibility is not issued without some payback. I mean, there's an expectation of a reciprocal relationship. And the city and the community has a responsibility to make sure that people have a place to live, including people who are just entrepreneurs and want to get out there and grind on cut metal. But the members of the community also have and anticipate having and are open to developing their own responsibilities to the larger community, that there's an expectation of picking up the trash. Maybe we would say, you know, turn off all the generators at 10 o'clock. maybe there'd be more of an effort to build more durable housing. You know, there could be a whole bunch of things done for the camp to be in a reciprocal, responsible relationship to the larger community, and they're open to doing that.
What is an ideal outcome for you and the Sears Lane encampment?
I began advocating for a managed camp 3 or 4 years ago. I told the mayor that's what he needed to do, kind of chuckled and pushed me out the door. But I think my warning has proven true. I think that it should have been managed in the first place, and I would like to see it managed now. However, now that there's an established community, that management has to be sensitive to the folks who already live there. It has to be a community based upon the principles of maximum freedom and maximum safety. You say, we don't want to create a jail. We're not creating a concentration camp. All we're doing is creating a space where everyone is safer. Everyone gets to do their thing, and everyone is safer, including the larger community around it. There is no expectation of harboring criminals. There is no expectation of harboring violence. People just want to live their lives. And the responsibility of the city is to have that relationship with the camp, to make sure that the services are provided, that it's recognized as a community, and that opportunities are created for making it a safe and sanitary and not unattractive location.
That was activist Stephen Marshall. Now, we did reach out to the mayor's office, and they gave us this statement from Mayor Merrill Weinberger. He says, I believe that homelessness in Burlington should be brief and rare, and my administration has worked hard for many years to expand resources and services for the individuals living in chronic homelessness. For the past year, these efforts have included an attempt to establish first a tiny home community and then a managed campsite at Sears Lane. Unfortunately, these efforts have not been supported by key partners, and now the encampment has become an immediate concern where significant harm has occurred and is likely to occur if the site continues. To protect the health and safety of the campers, neighbors, and our first responders, we must close this encampment. However, we will not stop fighting to bring needed support and resources to members of our community who are housing insecure. Again, that was Burlington's Mayor Merrill Weinberger. He will be on Vermont Edition next Thursday to answer your questions. Now, do you have questions about today's topic? Give us a call. Join the conversation, 1-800-639-2211. I now want to welcome Brenda Siegel. She's a former gubernatorial candidate, a policy advocate. She's currently sleeping on the steps of the statehouse to try to push the governor to include all people experiencing homelessness in the motel extension. Brenda, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So let's just start. How are the steps today? It's raining outside, so what's going on?
Yeah, so I will tell you, the granite is not the ideal sleeping condition, and nor is this level of cold. However, there's Vermonters all over the state that are expected to sleep in conditions like these, and so I'm no better than them, and this is what I'll do until we can ensure their safety.
So I'm curious, you know, we heard earlier in the show about the state's motel housing voucher program, and now we're hearing about the Sears Lane encampment in Burlington. How do the two compare?
So I think that overall you're seeing very similar problems. I mean, there are folks who don't want to live in traditional housing settings, in which case they do want to manage their own part of the land as well. And I think that that's something we do have to keep in mind. However, overall, there is not enough housing in our state, and we have a situation where the federal government will 100% reimburse the GA Motel program, and growing numbers of COVID in our state. And they also, we have motels that are willing to continue. We certainly have the capacity. Our group has reached out to motels. And so we should be ensuring that every person who's experiencing homelessness does have this option and this right.
I also want to welcome Jay Diaz from the Vermont ACLU to the show. Jay, welcome to the show.
Great to be with you.
Now, this is, we're going to have to get right into it, but earlier in the show, we just heard from Stephen Marshall, and he was talking about the Supreme Court, the Burlington Supreme Court injunction. What can you tell us about what's happening there and simplify the legal jargon?
Well, Well, I haven't seen any orders from the Vermont Superior Court, but what I gather is that the judge and the Vermont Superior Court received the paperwork and an application for a preliminary injunction from members of the camp as plaintiffs against the city, and that the judge has set a hearing to review the evidence to see if any rights have been violated.
And Jay, I want to know, like, legally, what are the laws when it comes to encampments in Burlington?
Well, it's a bit complicated. We had the ACLU filed a lawsuit back in 2017 on behalf of people who were camping on Burlington public land in the woods. And they twice had their property taken. We alleged Eighth Amendment violations and a Fourth Amendment violation against the right to unreasonable search and seizure. And while we were unsuccessful in getting an injunction, the case went further to discovery and was settled with the city, providing our client, Brian Proto Sr., with $25,000 and resulting in the current city policy that we have, which can be improved upon, but says that there will be specific procedures by which the city will follow if it's going to try and disperse people from a sheltering site. And here, from what we understand from the news, we don't believe that that process has been followed, and that the city has tried to say that this is such an immediate emergency that it needs to move forward in an expedited manner. And we just don't see cause for that.
You know, I think one of the things that really highlighted the safety concerns for the Sears Lane encampment was an incident that happened involving first responders. And so we got a question on social media that said, what are the laws on driving off police officers with what's perceived to be an AR-style rifle from a concealed offensive position in a city without permission from an owner?
Well, I think if someone, commits a crime, they need to be held accountable. But we don't, if someone in your neighborhood commits a crime next door, the town doesn't then demolish the entire neighborhood. So the sense of collective punishment is just not warranted. This is not a criminal issue. Living and trying to survive and shelter yourself when there isn't shelter available for you is not a criminal issue. It's a housing issue. And we can't balance the failure to enact adequate housing policy on the backs of the victims of that very failure. No one chooses willingly to live outside. If there was housing available and if there were the right resources available, I think the situation would be much different. But we have a pandemic, we have an overdose crisis, we have a housing affordability crisis, we have a mental health crisis. Advocates have been calling for more funding and more community-based services for years now, regarding substance abuse, mental health, and housing, and they simply are not meeting the need.
I want to go to the phones really quickly. We have a caller from North Conway. Regina, welcome to the show. Oh, sorry, we appear to be having some technical difficulties. Do we have Regina on the line? Regina, are you there?
You do, and it's North Concord, Vermont.
Oh, I'm sorry. North Concord.
The beautiful Northeast Kingdom.
Yes. What's your question or comment?
Yes, and you may have covered this in some of the conversations to date. I just arrived up here and did not hear the show from the very beginning. But my concern is that, as we know, once you put aside the population that is or has been employed, that is or has been trying to work, has owned homes, or has had long histories of successful rental and have been thrown off course by COVID and its attendant problems, once you put that population aside, which is basically your affordable housing need and your affordable child care need, I'll add, the homeless population has a percentage of its constituency that is in real need of mental health counseling, that even when offered viable possibilities of improving their lives and their living conditions, is not amenable to doing so for various reasons, either mental health issues, addiction issues. And if those aren't addressed as part of any plan, I think we're just on a treadmill to never being able to solve this. And I would hope that any solutions addressed for this coming winter, which is an immediate need, and I understand obviously not a lot of time to get ready for it, but that any solutions, any committees, any boards working on this will try to address the bigger mental health issues as part of the overall solution. And I also... And
Brenda, I think we have your comment. We are going to take that to Brenda. Brenda, how are people that are advocating for the homeless encampments and homelessness, the people experiencing homelessness in Vermont, how are they addressing mental health issues?
So as some folks may know, the issue that I work on the most is substance use disorder, which is absolutely a huge problem in our state. We have not done enough at all to address it, and we need to take much more seriously ending the drug war and addressing the overdose crisis as well. And the number one indicator for substance use disorder is trauma and mental illness. And so that's something that we absolutely need to address, and I'm going to continue to advocate for. But we do, as she said, we have this immediate need for housing. And housing, really, you can't access those services if your phone can't stay charged, if your paperwork is wet because everything got soaked. And I can tell you from sleeping on the steps that in the matter of 3 days, all our stuff has been soaked 3 different times. And we've had people come and dry it, but people experiencing homelessness don't have that. And so all their paperwork gets ruined. When you call economic services and ask for help, whatever they tell you, and I know this from being a low-income person, whatever they tell you is gospel. It's very hard for you to get beyond that place. And so folks that are experiencing homelessness don't know where to go once they've been told no by their service provider or by ESD. And so I think the very first step is for us to say, clearly, and to hold firm that housing has to be a human right, and that right now we have the ability to house people experiencing homelessness. And then folks get to address health care and substance use disorder. And we have reports that many people did. And in fact, when folks were removed, we did see some folks end up being destabilized, ending up without housing. And in fact, my son's very best friend from when he was little did die of an overdose 2 months later. I think that destabilizing people is a huge problem when you're looking at that front.
Now, Brenda,
I also want to say that the risk from COVID is huge. We've met folks who have had positive COVID and then been returned to the street here in Montpelier and exposing others because they have no choice. And that is why Biden did make this rule to reimburse 100% motel voucher program.
Now, I'm curious, when we talk about...
Jump in
with yeah, absolutely, Jay. Go ahead.
Just want to say, you know, earlier in the pandemic, in Burlington, the city and state provided at North Beach Campground, you know, camper vans for people to survive in and to be separate. You know, there isn't, you know, that's an immediate need, and it was immediate then and it was addressed. This can be addressed. It just takes political will and action. Long term, we need to do what so many in our government, including Mayor Weinberger, have said. They need a housing first policy, which includes wraparound services, nothing mandatory, no conditions. Give people a place to live and give them wraparound services if they want them.
Now, obviously, we can continue talking about this for the rest of the day. But I think we're going to put the pin on the conversation for now. We will continue to follow this topic as it progresses. I want to thank Brenda Siegel, who is a gubernatorial candidate and is a policymaker. Brenda, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much.
And Jay Diaz with the Vermont ACLU. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Connor.